The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Violinist Salini Amawat has an international career as a chamber music collaborator, orchestra member, and teacher. The Chicago native earned her master's degree in performance and Suzuki pedagogy at the Hart School of Music in Hartford, Connecticut. And then her love of early music and historical performance took her to Montreal, where she earned both a master and doctor of music in early music performance from McGill University. Salini Amawat joins me on Zoom to talk about her passion for music. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So pandemic is a challenge, and musicians have some unique challenges during lockdown. So how are you doing?
Oh, I mean, I honestly can't complain given, there's so many people have been affected in a variety of ways during the pandemic. But I have to say, you know, I have my health and my family is healthy and safe, and, you know, we're doing okay. So it's been a challenging year, and it continues to be a challenging time as we sort of navigate this new world. But, you know, for the most part, I'm doing well and you know, just happy to still be a musician, basically.
Yeah. So what was your initial introduction to music? You know, how old were you, and what was it, violin that you played first?
Yes. So I started on the violin just before my third birthday. Wow. So I actually have no memory of life before playing the violin. But what I was told, because I don't remember my first lesson, but my father, he loved the violin, and growing up in Thailand, he was sort of there during a time where Western instruments were just starting to be introduced into Thai culture and you know, pop culture, and as well as, you know, classical music culture. And so he really loved the instrument, and he found one. He kind of self-taught himself how to play. Mm-hmm. And so when he and my mother moved to the U.S., he wanted both my sister and I to have, you know, an education in music, because he never had one, and he really wanted that, but, you know, it wasn't accessible to him at the time. So he gave me and my sister a choice, and I guess I chose the violin. That's what that's what he told me, because I don't remember, but. But yeah, I mean, I started out as a Suzuki student, and my father was my Suzuki parent, and, you know, I sort of grew up in the method, and he was sort of there as my practice buddy, you know, until I was, you know, old enough to sort of go off on my own, and you know, that was how it started. It was a family activity, and with my sister on the piano as well.
Oh, wow. And is your sister also a professional musician?
She is not. She, you know, like when she hit the teenage years, she had other priorities, and so, you know, she didn't continue, but I continued, and, you know, mm-hmm. Here I am today.
Yeah. So you don't remember starting the violin, but do you remember and how did it happen that you just sort of knew that music is your life's work? Was there sort of a moment that you can recall?
So I grew up in Chicago, and I finished high school, and my family had plans to move back to Thailand, actually, after I finished high school. And so music was something that I always, you know, kept up with and had an interest in, and it was really the only thing that I felt like motivated to want to pursue. But because my family had plans to relocate, I ended up going to going into university for a business degree, actually. So I was a business major as my, in my, you know, for my bachelor's degree, but, you know, music was always my thing. And I kept playing and I eventually joined the professional orchestra in Bangkok while I was still a student. And it just became something that I was always, I always fell back on in terms of this is what I really want to do. And so even though my path kind of veered off, branched off for a brief part of my life, I came back after I graduated. I continued working as a freelance musician. I performed, I taught, and then eventually I ended up going back to grad school in music. And this is where it's brought me today.
Wow. Well, having that business training is a good thing for a musician.
Yes.
I'm gonna tell you.
Yeah, it's definitely brought me perspective as well.
Yeah.
Having done something else and then coming and having music all along, but also coming back to it in a sense as well. It's certainly a perspective that I don't know many other musicians share.
For sure. You started playing modern violin, though, and you earned your degrees at Hart. But then at some point you were inspired to follow the path of Baroque violin, and that took you to McGill in Montreal. So how did you discover Baroque violin? How did that happen? And how was that different from your earlier experiences playing modern violin?
So I was always interested in music history. That was one of my passions as a, you know, as a child, and I had always wanted the experience of playing on period instruments. So in the summer between my first and second year of my master's degree at Hart, I attended the Baroque Performances Institute at Oberlin, and I didn't really have a lot of expectation going into it, other than that I was just really excited for this opportunity, you know, to try a Baroque violin and a Baroque bow. And the very first activity or event that happens at BPI is this faculty concert. And I remember seeing Marc Destrubé and Ken Slowick performing these Haydn trios, and Ken Slowick was playing the baritone, and it just blew my mind. I mean, it was this whole other world in terms of sound and approach to performance that it just sort of drew me in from the beginning. And then that whole week, just working with Marc Destrubé in particular, and just being inspired by all of the musicians, the faculty, but also the atmosphere and the spirit of the students and other teachers that were there. It really changed everything for me. You know, it really showed me what chamber music could be like in particular, how free it could be. But I was just so drawn in by the sound and this freedom of expression and character, you know, that I had always wanted for myself in modern playing. But I felt that there was just, I don't want to use the word, it wasn't that it's lacking in modern violin, but it just didn't speak to me the same way. Mm-hmm. So that summer, after BPI, I went on to do the American Institute of Musical Studies, the Ames Festival in Graz, which was a whole other world. I mean, it's an amazing experience. You know, as part of the festival orchestra, you're basically in Europe for a month, and you know, you're accompanying singers and, you know, in various opera productions and concerts, and it was amazing. But I just kept thinking about the Baroque violin and just wishing that I was doing this. And so I, that summer, I just decided that this is what I wanted to do. This is what I needed more. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to apply for another master's degree in Baroque violin. And I auditioned at various places, and I ended up in Montreal because I loved the city, and I loved the teacher that I was going to be studying with. And, you know, and so it's sort of that it's one of those things where the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And so the more you want to continue, you know, exploring and learning. And so, you know, my master's led to a doctorate, and then this just became my world. And I'm just so, so happy to be a part of it.
Wow. Wow. That's a really inspiring sort of journey, like the arc of that process. You really were very keenly aware of that kind of falling in love process. That's really cool.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I've never had felt that way about anything else before. Mm-hmm. And so because it was such a strong pull, I realized that this must be what I was meant to do.
Ah, wow. So tell me about your violin or violins. You know, who made it? Who made it? When was it made? You know, some people play obviously historic instruments that are actually from the time, and a lot of people play reproductions. And so let's hear about the tool of your trade.
So my violin is a historical instrument. It's an antique from 1770 from the Klotz family, and I bought it from Andrew Dipper in Minnesota, who is a wonderful luthier. He finds these old instruments and he restores them back. He does the research and he restores them back to what their original setup would be. And I met Andrew at the Boston Early Music Festival exhibition some years ago, and I tried this violin, and it was, again, it was like, you know, you meet the one, you know, I was in the market for a violin at the time, and it was a question between buying a new instrument that's a model of an old instrument, or buying an old instrument. And there was just something about this instrument in particular, and like the depth. I feel like they have stories, you know, they have a soul. Mm-hmm. And this one just sounded like an old soul. And so it was the right match for me.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been together?
Oh, geez. I think I bought it back in 2014 or 2015.
Oh, okay.
I have to go back and check what year the festival was, but yeah, so it's been a few years.
Yeah. But still a honeymoon period.
Oh yeah. I mean, I remember the first few months that I had it, that it was mine. Mm-hmm. It was definitely an adjustment period. And I think it also was a little bit shocked to be in Canada because, you know, the weather was different. It was, you know, It had its own, you know, process to adjust as well to the climate. But now, you know, we've settled into each other and we're in it for the long haul, I think.
So you alluded to this a little bit earlier, talking about some of the people you worked with at that festival and whatnot. But are there any other teachers and mentors you want to call out? Anybody who really had a particular influence on your development as a professional?
I think every teacher that you have is going to have an impact for better or for worse, you know. In my time at McGill, I studied with Hélène Plouffe, who's just this wonderful teacher who is somebody who, I mean, she herself has like gone through this journey and has an amazing performance career. And she was just able to guide me every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And I remember very particular, you know, master classes where, you know, you almost feel like that particular teacher has knocked you down just so that you could build yourself back up. You know what I mean? Mm. It's, you know, and just, yeah, I don't. I mean, there's so many. I loved every chance I had to study with Julie Andrzejewski. Mm-hmm. Has been, it's almost like a checkpoint for me. I remember the first class that I had with her was that first summer that I started on the Broke Violin. I had no idea what I was doing, and I wasn't ready for all the knowledge that she had to give. Mm-hmm. And then a few summers later, I had another opportunity to study with her one-on-one, and I felt ready. And I felt, you know, she's such an amazing musician as well as scholar. And, you know, she has this way, and a pedagogue, you know, because she has this way of explaining technique and introducing technique to you that if you're ready for it, then it's just exactly what you need. It's like handing you over the keys to, you know, to like a nicer model of a car. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but yeah. You know, it felt like that.
Wow. Well, and speaking of teaching, that's a very important part of your career as well. Do you want to talk about what you love about teaching and how you try to impart that same kind of wisdom to your students, and also maybe how you've had to adapt during COVID?
Yeah, I mean, I teach students from all ages. I think my youngest student at the moment is 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And my oldest student is a retiree in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And then sort of everything in between. And so what I love about having, you know, teaching such a wide range of students is the relationship that you have with them at various points in their life, you know. So I've had a couple of students who I've taught since they were very little, and now they're, you know, graduating high school, and it's just amazing to have that long-term relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Which you don't necessarily get if you're teaching at a college level. Mm-hmm. You know, but then when I do have a chance to teach at that level, conservatory or university, I love that it's you're their teacher, but you're their mentor in a different way. You know, mm-hmm. you're exchanging knowledge, you're exchanging ideas, mm-hmm. and that you both can benefit from equally. Mm-hmm. These times that Infusion Baroque has gone on tour, we've also had a chance to work with middle school students and high school students. And I myself taught string orchestra when I was living in Thailand. And I just, you know, there's something about that age as well that's also really special, because, you know, with middle school students, you're sort of there when they're just starting to, in that transitionary age from being, you know, children to being teenagers, and then from teenagers to adulthood. So, So I really enjoy being a part of that growth. Now, you know, with the pandemic, of course, everything is on Zoom, and so I find that I'm actually enjoying the Zoom lessons. They're not, once you sort of get the hang of it, it's not so bad, and in a way, it's helped me to develop better communication skills, because when you're trying to communicate something and you only have your words and you can't demonstrate necessarily, or you can't physically manipulate, you have to really, really be succinct with your words. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's challenging if you're being a beginner, but I also have some really great parents that are partners at home too. So that helps. It's such an extraordinary asset.
Great. That's great. You alluded to Infusion Baroque, so I do want to talk about that. You co-founded this ensemble, Period Instrument Quartet, that has already made 2 recordings, which is great. And your focus is music of the 17th and 18th centuries on historical instruments. How did Infusion Baroque get started, and where do you hope that will go?
So we were all students at McGill together. Not necessarily all at the same time, but we all had this connection through McGill. Mm-hmm. And we were friends at first, and who occasionally played together. And myself and Alexa Rainwright, our flautist and recorder player, we were friends, but we didn't have as much opportunity to collaborate in chamber ensembles during our time at McGill, but we had sort of like this regular brunch meeting or brunch date where we would get together and just talk and have a good time. And so we came up with this idea of you know, starting an ensemble, because we realized Alexa and I didn't have a chance to play with each other as often as we would have liked to. This was back in 2013. And then that year, we entered the Early Music America Baroque Performance Competition, and we ended up as finalists, and then we went on to win the competition, and that sort of solidified our ensemble. It went from being something, oh, let's just get together and play, mm-hmm. to wow, I think we can actually go somewhere with this group.
Oh, cool. And I know that you've been using some of your time during lockdown to make some online performances that have some cameo appearances from your pets. Do you want to talk about the pets? Bunny is
So our
sleeping, we
pet,
know, but.
yes. I mean, the four of us are animal lovers, and so when we're together, we're always talking about our pets. And so a few years ago, we had this idea for them to have their own social media accounts, because we were a little bit reluctant to, at that time, to have a, multiple social media accounts, other than our Facebook group page. But then we figure, okay, let's join Instagram, but let's have our pets be the ones who run the account, we now have our own official Instagram account, but our pets are sort of always been a part of our social media presence as much as they are present in our personal lives. It's fun to share that side of us with people.
Yeah. You want to give a shout out to each of them? The what they are, what species, and their names?
Yes. So my pet, I have a pet rabbit. His name is Brody. He's extremely soft and a little bossy. And Rona, our harpsichordist, she has two cats, Fluffy and Gracie, who she rescued. She rescued off the street. So they're a little shy, and often camera shy, but that's okay. Alexa has a rescued greyhound named Lyra, who is very photogenic, and she has a lot of pajamas and jackets that she likes to model on our social media account. And Andrea, our cellist, has a labradoodle, I believe, named Callie, who's just the sweetest ball of fluff, big ball of fluff. She's quite large, but she's a very gentle soul.
Ah, well, that goes well with music, all of that. So
Yes,
that's lovely.
absolutely.
So Infusion Baroque has two recordings so far, CPE Bach and Georg Anton Kreuser. How'd you choose this repertory? And do you have any other recordings in the works?
So the CPE Bach was our first CD, and it just I think we as an ensemble have always gravitated towards Baroque music from that is more gallant or from the high Baroque, even the transitionary periods between the Baroque and classical periods. And CPE Bach, I think, is one of those Baroque composers who don't really quite fit in the box of, being really Baroque or really classical. There's so many interesting textures and harmonies to explore in his music. So we had, and it's challenging. I mean, it's not easy chamber repertoire. You really have to really look deep into the music to do it justice. And so this was a really good experience for us as a first album, to sort of really go through that process of spending a lot of time with this music, spending a lot of time with each other, and sort of getting to know each other in a recording situation, and just having fun with the music. It's so fun, And the Kreuser album came about as a result of a concert that we did earlier that season, where the theme of the concert was music for four. And we discovered these Kreuser pieces just on IMSLP, but it was interesting because it had an obbligato part for flute, violin, viola, cello, and continuo. So it's we had a lot of fun sort of exploring that texture, as well as, when you listen to the music and certainly when you play it, you see how Kreuser really, really he takes advantage of this style of conversational music that was so popular in the mid-18th century. And these lines that come out, between the flute and the viola, or the flute and violin, or even the lower instruments with the continuo. I mean, he plays with these textures in a way that is just so fun to play, but also just you listen to it and you can't help but feeling like, oh, this is so this is so nice. You know, it's just really enjoyable music. Mm-hmm. And so that CD, we collaborated with two other artists in Montreal as well. And so again, that was just a really, really fun opportunity to explore music that is rarely played. I'd never heard of this composer before, and I've never heard any other group play him since. So I really hope that people discover him more. And actually, we posted a video of us playing one of his pieces, and it was discovered by a musicologist, a German musicologist, who is probably the one of two musicologists that are working on his music in particular. Mm. And so that started this sort of communication and collaboration with this musicologist, and he helped us quite a bit with the research. And it was just a great, great experience and a fun discovery for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's next? Do you have any other recordings that you have on your wish list?
We do. So this year, we've been recording our next album, which is going to be a two-disc CD called Virtuosa. And it's music that is dedicated to women performers or composed by women musicians. And this repertoire ranges from the 17th century to the 21st century. So it's a huge range of textures for us. It's there's string trios, there's trio sonatas, there are duets, and there is a contemporary piece by a Canadian composer that we recorded as well. And this CD is the culmination of work that we've been doing for the past couple of years based on this theme of women performers. Mm-hmm. And we're just really, really excited to share not just this music, but the stories of these women as well. Mm-hmm. Because doing the research into this music, we discovered that these women who had to overcome a lot of social barriers, they didn't have access to a musical education in the same way that some of their male contemporaries did, yet they were able to compose and perform and tour despite all of these challenges. And yet you never read about them in the history books. Mm-hmm. You know, most of these women I'd never heard of before. Mm-hmm. But then you discover their stories and how pioneering they were in their field. And you know, you wonder why. It's through their work that, you know, I'm here today, that you're here today, you know, mm-hmm. that women have an opportunity mm-hmm. to be part of this musical world. And so their stories deserve to be told.
Great. And when do you expect that will be released?
The CD will come out in the fall, later on this year. Mm-hmm. We're recording it in two parts because one CD is Baroque repertoire with harpsichord and the other is classical and romantic repertoire with a forte piano. So it's sort of a long-term recording project that we plan to release later on in 2021.
Wow, wow. So you've expressed so many really interesting activities, passions, and whatnot. What else are you passionate about? What's really getting to you at this moment in time? What are the things that make you, I don't know, happy, inspired, optimistic, what concerned, whatever?
Yes, I think for me personally, I think one of the things that the pandemic allowed for me to do was to have the space, the mental space, to really think about the kinds of projects that I really want to be involved in and that I want to create. And so right now with Infusion Broke, as well as my own personal projects, I'm starting to explore this idea of cultural relationships and cultural exchanges within the context of Baroque music. And I have to say that this, I'm certainly not the first one or the, you know, the only artist to have, you know, gone in this direction. But I again, you know, I'm starting to have that same pull as I did, you know, when I picked up the Baroque violin, or, you know, those other moments in my life where I feel like, okay, this is the path that I want to be walking this at this moment. And so next season, Infusion Baroque is doing a collaboration with Iranian santur player Amir Amiri, as well as Indian-American soprano Vidita Kanix, who was also a recent graduate of McGill. And both Amir and Vidita have been doing a lot of their own work in terms of these sort of crossover collaborations and arrangements. And Infusion Baroque did a program earlier this season that sort of touched on this. In reflection, we felt that this could definitely go further and that we needed to you know, collaborate with others to really do it justice, you know, mm-hmm. do this theme justice. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited about this. It's going to be Baroque music that's arranged for our ensemble and santur with vocal music and exploring these Indo-colonial airs that were popular in India in the 19th century, as well as some of Amir's own arrangements of Persian folk tunes for Baroque instruments. So this is something that I'm really excited about for Infusion Baroque. And last year I formed a new partnership with a Canadian dancer named Benjamin Tardif. And he's actually the only non-Thai classical dancer. His story is also pretty amazing. He went on an exchange program in Thailand and he discovered a particular form of Thai dance called Khon, which is it's masked theater dance that is specifically it exists to perform scenes from the Ramayana, which is a Hindu epic story similar to what the Iliad is, but from the East. And he and I are doing a collaboration where we combine French Baroque music and Thai classical dance and contemporary dance, sort of in homage to this explorer who went to travel to Thailand in the 17th century and wrote about this particular form of dance. Mm-hmm. And it was the first written record that this type of dance exists. And so, you know, we're sort of, you know, exploring that connection, but in a modern setting. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really excited about this. And what makes me the most excited about this partnership is that Ben, through his own journey of discovering this, and he moved to Thailand and he went through all of the formal training to be able to be a professional dancer in this medium. He and I are sort of teaching each other. He teaches me about Thai culture, whereas I'm teaching him about Western culture. And it's sort of this ironic partnership because you would think that it's the opposite, but I think it just shows that, you know, what globalization, the benefits of it and how these partnerships can go both ways and, you know, while being respectful to this, to both art forms.
Yeah. That's remarkable. I can't wait to experience the result of that collaboration.
Yes, I'm very excited about these projects.
I'll bet. I've been speaking with violinist Salini Amawat on Zoom about her career as a musician specializing in historical performance. Thank you very much. This has really been fun.
Thanks a lot for having me.